And then I'll say the name of the title, which is...
What's the name of the title?
Six and seven.
Step six and seven.
Thank you.
I'll either come pick it up or someone can do it.
All right. Five, one, okay. Okay, let's get started. Good morning, everyone. My name is Don, compulsive eater and food addict. Let's begin with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Can everyone hear me in the back? Okay. Okay. Can you hear me in the back? Okay. Do this. All right. Okay. This is a step six and seven meeting. Each of us will have up to 20 minutes to speak, and then we'll open the room for shares on the topic up to 3 minutes. The session is being recorded. This workshop will end at what time? 12? 12?
Yes.
For the rest of the time, we'll hear, after we speak, we'll hear 3 minute pitches from the floor. The timer will signal you when you have 1 minute left. All right, after we speak, you'll form form a line at the front of the room. Remind you the session is being recorded and you're sharing constraints, your consent to be recorded. If you want to remain anonymous, please leave a fictitious name or choose not to share. All right, so as I said, my name is Don, compulsive eater and food addict. From Connecticut. I came to the program in 1982, grossly obese, suicidal, and an atheist. Other than that, I had everything going for me. I count my abstinence from 1984, maintaining a little under 200-pound weight loss now for about 4 decades. My highest weight was somewhere between 50 and 400, not exactly sure. I'm also no longer an atheist, but it's very much a higher power of my understanding. OA saved my life, literally. I climbed on a bridge over the Hudson River in New York about a month before I accidentally found my way into my first OA meeting. There's a God story there somewhere, but that's for another meeting, another time. I've been free from the prison of food obsession for a long time. You can read more of my story in the Overeaters Anonymous 3rd edition called Freedom Isn't Free, if you like. So I'm an old timer. It's easy to become an old timer. Just keep going to meetings and don't die. You become an old timer. The steps are a change process, and that's my focus for my 20 minutes here today. This is all about change. Sometimes I say the steps are a two-step process. One is put down the food, detox, and change in order to get the power to keep it down. And that basically is the bottom line of everything I'm going to emphasize today here, the change part of that process. If nothing changes, nothing changes. If I don't change what I eat, I'll physically stay the same. If I don't change how I think, I will continue to feel like I've always felt. If I don't change my behavior, I will always get what I've always gotten. So the steps for me were a process for basically rewiring my brain, a process to help me learn to think differently, to re-educate my mind, to change those beliefs and ideas and priorities that led me to the uncomfortable feelings, that led me to the obsession, that led me to the first bite, that led me to pick up into compulsion and eventually become an addict. So it all starts right here between the ears. You know, in step one, I put down the food. I had to detox from food so I could objectively examine my life, since food was the symptom, not the problem. I accepted I had an incurable but arrestable disease over which willpower was useless and that I could never treat food like a normal eater, ever. In step two, from seeing and hearing, recovery in the room, remember the atheist. Seeing and recovery, seeing and feeling and hearing recovery in the room, I gained the hope that kept me coming back. I basically thought everybody was crazy, but there was something here. It was those guys and those women who used to be the 300 pounds who now look awfully normal, and they were sitting around laughing and talking about this, and I thought, these people are totally nuts, but something must be going on here. So that was the hope that kept me coming back in step two. Step three, basically I just committed to work in the program, the rest of the 12 steps. For me, surrender was not so much giving up. It was about deciding to cooperate. It was something I didn't understand, but okay, I'll sign up. I'll admit myself to the metaphorical OA hospital. What do I do next? And the answer was 4 through 12. Get moving on the steps. So in step three, I committed to work in the program, as I said. So steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 are where the action started for me. Here I began rebuilding myself, rewiring the brain, as I said before. A major personality change. Now in four and five, I identified the self-destructive thinking. And now 6 and 7 were simply identifying the solutions with the help from the literature, with the help from the people in the rooms, with the help of my sponsor. In other words, the antidotes to the shortcomings and all the problems that I identified in step four, which I didn't even realize were problems for a long time. So my job was to identify these solutions and then begin to practice these new ways of thinking and acting. Yes, I was asking a higher power to give me the courage to do this, but ultimately it was me that had to work on the change. From my perspective, I learned that with higher power's help, I act my way into right thinking, not think my way into right acting. So no magic wand for me, no magic wand on top of the head that's going to change me. I had to take the action. And that may be the most important thing I say for the day, right? God's not going to do for me what I need to do for myself. So 6 and 7 for me were the centerpiece of where I really began the brain rewiring. I defined the problems in 4 and 5, as I said. Now I define the solution. Now I'm going to give you process here. It's going to sound like instruction, but remember, this is just Don's way of doing this and the way I take sponsees through these steps. So think two columns, left column, right column. Left column is the problem, right column is a solution. Now think just multiple sheets of paper. Left column is the defect. So for example, fear. Well, I'll use fear as an example. Under that fear, I'm going to put a numbered list of things. Where does this fear manifest exactly? Where? With spouse, with my parents, with job, with my kids, whatever. Sometimes it's a very long list. Where does fear really come out in my life? That's the left column. Now, right column? All right, I'm going to look at every one of those things. After you've completed the left for the shortcoming, all the places fear manifests in your life, go to the second column, take each numbered item, put down an action plan. This was the beginning of major personality change for me, and still is the basis of my personality change. No, I can't do it all by myself. This is just cognitive behavior therapy. There's much more here, but this is where I start. I had to do my part. God's not going to do it all. Starting to take these actions shows the higher power of my understanding that I am truly willing to change. Truly willing to do it. I said, I'm afraid to do that to my tough love sponsor. He says, I don't give a, you know what, do it anyway. Oh, okay. And I did it anyway. Guess what happens when you do things that you're afraid of? Next time you're not so afraid. And that's what I mean when I say I act my way into right thinking and I think my way into right acting. So again, some specific examples for me on fear. So where did the fear manifest in my life? Well, I'll give you four examples. Fear of failure and looking stupid held me back on the job, as well as from doing many things I would love to do. Second thing, I am afraid to be honest with my spouse, even if I'm really unhappy, because it might cause conflict. And I am afraid of breaking up, and it's going to be economic insecurity, et cetera, et cetera. Another place it manifests, the fear, I always feel like I'm acting and on stage hoping that I will perform as well as I think others expect me to perform, right? In other words, everything is based upon what I think you'll think. For example, I'm afraid of opening myself and being vulnerable. For 41 years, I had a wall built around me to protect myself. Fifth step was the beginning of that wall coming down. Let's look at the second call now on the specific things that I just mentioned. On the fear of looking stupid and holding back, all right, my action plan. Since faith displaces fear, I will work to increase my faith through study, through prayer, through meditation, and fellowship with people of faith. Another thing I will do, I will stop holding back on my job and start putting in my ideas. No more yes, sir, yes, man. Yes, oh, I agree with you. No. If I don't agree, I'm going to say I don't agree. Or I have a different idea. That, by the way, changed my entire professional career. Another example, I will sign up with a course in Excel in those days. Stuff like that scared me to death, even if I am frightened. Another example, I'll ask God to give me the courage to do things I know I need to do, but I'm frightened of doing, like talk to my mother about going into assisted living. On number two, they're afraid to be honest with my spouse. Okay, I would be honest with her about how I truly feel and trust that things will go where they need to go, where they need to go. Whatever happens, I'll be okay. Being who I am is better than pretending. Another example on pretending to be who I think they want me to be or you want me to be. Well, from now on, I will be real with Bill, with Sally, and Ed. I'll tell them who I really am and what I'm truly thinking and feeling, including, and this was a biggie, including say, I don't know if I don't know the answer. You know, I never said I don't know for a lot of years. I didn't know the answer, I'd make it up. On number four, afraid of being vulnerable, I will take down the wall and open up and be me and let go and let God. I'm a child of God. I'm okay. I can deal with whatever happens. I'll feel much better about myself if I open my heart. So this two-column model, problem-solution, is basically the touchstone of my recovery for these 43 years. I'm talking later today about 10, 11, and 12, and I'm going to connect what I'm saying here, 6 and 7, with 10. You know, how am I doing on these action plans? I've learned over the years not to say, God, take away something, but to say, help me in the solution. In other words, focus on the positive. That works so much better for me. Focus on the positive. I'll give you some examples of that. I have in front of me a piece of paper that's dated July 14, 25, and it's entitled, My Highest Priorities at This Time. And it's an action plan on various things that I need to work on. I'll give you some examples. It says, practice living in faith and trust rather than fear and worry about the future. Lots of worries about physical condition is not so good. And I have lots of worries about becoming a dependent, not able to do this, and not able to do that, etc. Practice living in surrender to the flow rather than trying to control and manage everything. Help practice living in acceptance of my reality rather than fighting the uncontrollable. Lots of uncontrollables around me. Matter of fact, everything except me. I'm the only thing I'm in control of, right? Practice living in responsibility and being accountable rather than blaming everybody and everything. Practice trying to be hopeful, have a hopeful attitude rather than expecting the worst. Pessimistic, that's what I came out of my childhood with. Is, you know, Donnie, she called me. Donnie, you'll never be disappointed if you expect the worst from people. That's what I grew up with, and that's bullshit. Sorry, it is, you know. We're much better off if we look for the good, feel for the good, listen for the good in people, and expect the good. Practice focusing on solutions rather than problems. Practice trying to be cheerful rather than gloomy. Practice trying to live in awareness of God's presence rather than feeling alone. Higher power, OA 12 and 12 suggests that willingness is the moral principle of step 6. I show my willingness to change by trying to live in the new ways. I follow my action plans. In other words, I think that God will give me the strength to do this. Will he do this? And I show God that I'm willing to do this and change by practicing these things. To receive a miracle, I heard someone say, I need to put myself in a position to receive the miracle. And this is the way I see it in this step. I practice these things. I show God I'm willing to change. And what happens? I keep doing it, and I keep doing it. And one day I wake up and say, wow, I've changed. Is that all me or is it all God? Well, I like the word partnership. You'll find that word partnership in step 7 of the OA 12 and 12. It's a word that I like very much. It's not all God, it's not all me. There's no magic. The OA 12 and 12 suggest that humility is the moral principle of step 7. Well, you know, in the broad scheme of things, the 12-step path of recovery, from my perspective, leads from self-centeredness to God-centeredness or to other-centeredness. You know, from a mindset of how can I get to how can I be useful? How can I get mine to how can I be useful to others? And that's what has made my difference. That's what it changed my life as I moved through that process that I didn't understand, but I just kept doing it because they told me to keep doing it. And sure enough, I began to look in the mirror and say, something is changed here. What's going on? But I knew it before I did. So all these steps, I see them as humility steps. In step one, you know, I say I don't have the power to control what I'm putting in my mouth. Humility. In step two, I accept that, well, I can't. Maybe there's some power other than myself that can. Step three, I accept that not only can I not control my food, I'm not in control of most other things in the universe either. Ego breaking, ego reduction is what these steps are all about for me. In four, I honestly look at the mirror of who I really am. It's sobering and humble to accept that I have significant flaws that have negatively affected my life and the lives of others. I argued and argued and argued with that tough love sponsor of mine in the beginning about these things. And he said, Don, you know, your problem is you're educated beyond your intelligence. And I said, I first thought that was a compliment. It was not a compliment. He was telling me to shut my mouth and open my brain and keep going. And thank God for that man. He's on my gratitude list all the day. He's long gone, but he's on my gratitude list. In step five, I opened myself to another person for the first time in my life, as I said. In step nine, a very clear ego reduction step where I go face to face with people who I have hurt in the past and make amends. So my time is running down. All these actions that I've talked about here through the steps gradually move me from self-centeredness to humility. No longer needing to control, no longer trying to impose my will or to think I know all the right answers, right? So I become a right-sized person who doesn't need to use the mood-altering drug of food to deal with life, because food ultimately, as I said, was the symptom. It was a drug that I was using for comfort and escape, unconsciously in the beginning. And then later I began to realize, oh my God, I'm an addict. I can't have one of those without wanting 10 more, right? And then I began to understand the physiology of it all. And it's, you know, there is a physiology for this. It's the same as alcohol, same as amphetamine, same as a whole bunch of other drugs. It's the dopamine reflex in the brain. So final comment on step six, and I'll wrap it up. When someone comes to me who's been around for a while and asks and calls me, tells me they've fallen into relapse, I begin by asking them several questions. The first is usually, do you fully accept step one, that you have a disease over which willpower is useless? Usually they say, well, I'm not sure. I say, what about your morning quiet time? Are you doing that every day? And, well, okay, I'm not so much anymore. What OA service are you doing for OA? Because step 12 is all about service, right? Service isn't optional, it's step 12. And usually they say, well, not so much. They've become complacent and they've forgotten all this stuff. You know, daily treatment is required if I'm going to hold on to it. But the third question, so many don't have an answer to, and the most important in making my point for today, is I ask them, tell me what things you begin working on changing in yourself in step 6 and 7. And they almost always never have an answer. And my tough love, hopefully humorous response is, you mean you didn't need to make any changes in yourself to find freedom from obsession of the food, with the food? And you know what that means, right? So my old tough love sponsor, they want to hit me in the mouth. And sometimes they laugh and sometimes they say, okay, what's my point? My point is, my experience is that we need to get very specific about what we're going to work on changing, ask God's help every day, and use these step 6 and 7 action plans as part of our 10th step. So this is where it all began for me, the change. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. It's amazing how we tell the same story differently. I'm really pretty amazed. So I want to first do a little bit of personal housekeeping before I start my talk today. First, I'll introduce myself. I'm Shari. I'm a compulsive reader, and I'm from Montreal. I'm so happy you're here. I'm so happy I'm here. All right. I have a tattoo on my arm. Don's going to like this. It says freedom isn't free.
Oh, see.
This arm, I have a little place saved here for nothing changes if nothing changes, because that is how I live my life, by those two ideas every day. Then I want to talk about something that happened yesterday, which is I was moving my car and I was hungry and I was on my own for the day because my wife is on some panel here. She keeps disappearing on me. I can never find her. And so I took the whole day for myself, which was so fun. And someone working in the garage, I went up to him and I said, I need to go somewhere to eat lunch. Do you have a recommendation? And he said, yes, there. Do you like barbecue? I'm like, barbecue? I could live on barbecue. I love barbecue. Where is this restaurant? He's like, da, 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 da. I'm like, okay, that's where I'm going for lunch. I get to my car and I'm like, what's wrong with you? You're at a freaking OA convention. You are not going for barbecue for lunch. I came back here and bought a salad. And that is why I'm in this program. And the last thing is I have to show you some few things. It's very hard for me. I'm a very proud owner of these bat wings. I'm in the bat wings club because I've lost a lot of weight and I have bat wings. And women often talk about their bat wings, and I just wanted to tell you, like, it's hard, but it's okay. And the other thing I wanted to do is do this. Because I'm working on my body image, and I want you to see so that I know how fantastic it is, no matter what size it is. On any given day, I want to stand in front of the mirror and be able to do that because I'm entitled to it. Entitlement is not something that's negative. It can be something positive. We are entitled, no matter what we look like, to love our bodies. We are entitled. Okay, now I'm going to go on script. Good morning. Today I'm going to talk about my experience, strength, and hope while taking steps 6 and 7. Step 6 is, we're entirely ready to have God remove the defects of character. Step 7 is, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. The spiritual principles of these two steps are willingness and humility. I don't know if you've seen the movie Naiad. Diana Naiad is my hero. I'm a swimmer. I was always a swimmer. I work for a swimming company. I'm a swimmer. And if you could just, I have a picture of her hanging in my bedroom naked, her backside, because it's incredible. She's in her late 60s and beautiful. So if you've seen the movie, you could just see her swimming. You keep that in the back of your mind while I read or talk. It will make it more fun for you. It makes it more fun for me. Every word you hear me say today was written 4 days after last year's conference. At last year's conference, I went to the Step 6 and 7 workshop, and I had a psychic change. I already knew then that I wanted to lead this workshop today. So as soon as the sign-up sheet, I was so afraid someone would take it. Like, the first day, I'm like, ah, give me that. I think that was my higher power telling me that I had something of value to share, and that preparing early would keep me accountable during the whole year, so that I could unambiguously and honestly deliver my higher power's message today. It really stayed with me all year. I wrote it, and I was like, oh, well, I can't do this, I can't do that, I won't be able to share next year, and I've already written it, so why waste my writing? I've been involved in the OA program for 22 years. I guess that almost makes me an old timer. I don't really know how that happened. When I first came into the program, I took the scales at 200 pounds of anger, disappointment, and self-pity. Presently, I'm maintaining a weight loss of about 65 pounds, give or take a few pounds on any given month. I've had two relapses. The first lasted several years, but I never left the program, never. And there were still foods I did not eat during my relapses. The first lasted several years and I gained 40 pounds, and the second lasted a few months and I gained 15 pounds. So I'm getting better at relapses through the grace of my higher power, not me. Me alone would weigh 300 pounds. I used to hate those words, by the grace of God or my higher power. They were so airy-fairy, so weirdly spiritual. I was like a potatoes girl. I swore I would never use them. I thought relying on my higher power would make me sound weak, be weak. But now they make me feel strong and sure. Like a football player with all of my pads on, my higher power going with me into battle against this disease. I know some of you want to roll your eyes at me. Go ahead. I don't mind. Just don't leave this workshop and don't leave this program. My backstory is exactly the same as your backstory. No better, no worse. I could talk about it all day. It's so interesting to me. But that I wouldn't have time for me to talk about these two steps, so let me get to it. I have learned that some people think that step 6 and 7 aren't that important. One of last year's keynote speakers actually left them out of her discussion of 12 steps when time was running short. At first, these two steps may seem almost frivolous. After all, what does a person have to do to complete them? Be ready to have our character defects removed and ask our higher power to remove them. Easy peasy. Let's get step 8. But in reworking these two steps after my second relapse, and by attending this workshop last year, I have since had a spiritual change leading me to come to believe that for me, steps 6 and 7 are the heart of my program. It's these steps which have prompted a true deepening of my relationship with my higher power and caused the biggest change in my behavior towards myself. That's really important, between me and my higher power, and between me and every other person, place, and thing in the universe. So let's start here. Try to imagine standing on the shore of a huge ocean. We're all Diane Iyad. Let's say that steps 1 to 3 are the acceptance steps. In these steps, we get into water and trust that we will float without sinking. In steps 4 and 5, we learn to swim. And finally, as we prepare for 6 and 7, we start to swim hard. We swim until a boat floats by. Sadly, we miss getting on. Then in a little while, another boat floats by. And then another boat. If we are lucky, race towards one of the boats and heave ourselves over the gunwales and onto its lure. This boat represents step 6. Don't worry. If we miss it, another boat, step 6 boat, will be along soon. There's always another one coming. They're scheduled. They pass by very frequently. So we're in the bottom of the boat. Once our heartbeat slows down and we begin to feel safe, we pick up the oars and we start rowing. We need to have faith that we are rowing in the correct direction. And where are we going? To a place where we are entirely ready to have all of our defects of character removed. And the place we are rowing towards, what does it look like? Me? I'm rowing towards the most beautiful island that I could ever imagine. A place where true serenity and acceptance exists, along with beautiful tans and no tan lines. In reality, I'm heading towards my higher power, and I'm getting ready to make a request when I reach that island. Along the way, I face many storms and angry seas, and that sometimes push me backwards and toss me into the howling waves. But there will also be beautiful pockets of sunshine and calm water, plenty of opportunities to jump in and float on my back, to just be. And what's happening during all these days of rowing? I'm becoming willing, and I'm becoming humble. Humble enough to ask my high power to remove from me all these defects of character. I'm coming to believe that a power greater than myself could remove my shortcomings. This is very hard work, and I begin to wonder, why does she even want this? I love my defect character. I love knowing that I was right. I love knowing that I deserve pity. I love getting my way. I love jumping the turnstile in the subway and getting away with it. I only stopped doing that last year. I love being codependent, a people pleaser, and controlling everything around me. I love feeling powerful and in charge, until I didn't. I became tired of trying to swim alone to the island of my higher power instead of getting in the boat. It turns out that there were sharks in the water trying to bite me. Salt was eating at my skin, think Diana Nyad. It was cold, and I was a bundle of worry and fear every minute of the day. I had no strength left to fight the tide. And no matter how much effort I put into my strokes, I found myself constantly being pushed back to shore and having to start over. I needed rest, and I needed relief. I had plenty of time to think while I rowed. I made an accounting of every single thing that scared me and scarred me. Everything that the sea took from me while I spent years swimming for my life. I thought about behaviors that no longer served me. I thought about the people that I had harmed, including myself, especially myself. I thought about all the time lost while just swimming to stay in place. I thought about it all for a good long time. I cried. I pounded on the rails of the boat. You could say that I had a good old temper tantrum. And when my accounting of the sea was done, I became entirely ready to use this new way of traveling to get to my beautiful sunny island delight and ask to have my defects of character removed. I didn't realize on the boat I was doing two-way prayer this whole way time, and I couldn't be in this program without it. But there was more. I needed to be humble. I had no idea what humility was. I actually had to look it up in the dictionary. Luckily, the sea and my higher power were there to teach me. I felt at the mercy of all of the storms that kept coming. I was scared. I was exhausted. I felt helpless. I cried out for help and let go of the oars, praying that the sea would not eat me and that I would be taken to the shore. And I accepted the idea of letting go and letting the universe carry me forward. I became humble. Finally, one sunny day, I see a shore. The shore gets closer, and finally, I step onto dry land. I am so tired that I fall to my knees and I weep. I ask my higher power to remove my shortcomings. Ooh, it's giving me chills. And I am so grateful that I make a promise to myself to stay on the island forever and never have to go through all of that again. But curiously, I found that it was not up to me. Sometimes an earthquake erupts in the form of a person, place, or thing, and this earthquake causes a tsunami, and I'm blown all the way back to the shore where I began my journey, and I need to get back into the water again and swim towards the first boat I see, making my journey all over again. You would think that by now I would know the way to my island, but I don't. Somehow, the currents keep moving its location, and that's why I constantly need to reach out to my higher power and ask for directions. Hopefully, recently added to all Step 6 boats is a manual with daily maps and readings, as well as a bucket of tools to use in order to maintain the boat and my serenity. I use some of these every day, and I also go on to many passenger meetings to talk to other drivers in order to learn new information and ideas. Finally, One day a week, I talk to my own personal boat steer mentor, who gives me personal tips and hints as to where my island might have moved. And during bad weather, I still need to ask for help from my higher power in order to keep my boat balanced and stable. Sometimes I'm not strong enough and the boat capsizes and I begin to drift. At these times, I hang on to the sides of my boat with all of my might, praying constantly, higher power, please help me. Higher power, please help me. Until the storm passes. I never cease this prayer. And soon enough, I pray it a million times a day. And soon enough, every single time, always without fail, a wind or a wave created by another passing vessel rights my boat and I climb back in. And after a good long breather, I begin to row again. It's funny. I find, but every single time I survive one of these storms, I can see that my eye of acceptance and serenity is just a little bit closer. I can feel the tide pulling me, not backwards as it used to, but forwards towards its beautiful shores. And I'm entirely ready to reach those shores. And I know exactly from whom to ask for directions if I get lost along the way. Will I ever live full time on my island? I don't know. It's really not up to me. But these days, when I have to row, I'm rowing with more power and confidence, and I'm starting to truly enjoy the ride. And very soon, I'm hoping to see each of you rowing beside me as we row together towards our happy destinies. Thank you. That was terrifying. This workshop will end at 12 noon. For the rest of the time, we'll hear 3-minute pitches from the floor. The timer, thank you, Claire, will signal you when you have 1 minute left. If you would like to share, please form a line at the front of the room or come up when you need to. We remind you that this session is being recorded and your sharing demonstrates your consent to be recorded. If you wish to remain anonymous, please use a fictitious name or choose not to share. Please say where you're from and how long you've been in OA. Devote your share to your OA's experience, strength, and hope on the topic of this workshop. The meeting is now open for sharing. I'm done, it's your turn.
Thank you both. That was amazing. Laura Ann, compulsive reader from Brooklyn, New York. I've been in program 27 years, and I'm imperfectly abstinent for 2.5 years now. I have to say, at the risk of being a fangirl, Don's workshop really changed the way I work my program. I came in like the late 70s, 80s, and I somehow got the message that you have to vent, you know, and just have your feelings and vent. And that never produced recovery for me. You know, the same thing with, you know, working the steps rigidly using the big book only didn't stick, you know. And, you know, I don't know, for me, like the big book section on 6 and 7 is just not specific enough. And I got so focused on just doing big book that I didn't even realize that there was a new daily reader. You know, Don referred to VOR at a convention a million years ago. Yeah, and I didn't even know voices, I didn't even know it existed. So anyway, Don reintroduced me to the OA literature and the OA steps, which is just amazing. I mean, it actually has instructions, you know, and for me, making a very specific plan, I mean, as the book says, the defects of character do come back, and we have to have a plan to deal with them. And for me, it's like a lot of, I know CBT, like self-talk, you know, specific behavior that I'm going to do when it comes up. You know, I don't know, it's really, You know, it's been really changed my recovery, you know, and I'm very hopeful to continue to be abstinent a day at a time, you know. You know, it's a lot of, you know, for me, a lot of acceptance of the way things are in the world. Thank you. Having to talk myself through it, you know, like one of my things that makes me crazy, you know, I've been really focusing on my defects of resentment, anger, and perfectionism. One of the things that really makes me crazy is customer service. You know, that in this day and age, you know, it did not benefit companies to provide real customer service. And this is the way the world is changing. You know, there is very little customer service. And I really have to kind of ask myself, is this worth the time to stay on the phone on hold? You know, how much money are we talking about here? And is it worth my time? Is it worth, you know, I really had to, like, start looking at that. You know, it's an example, you know, from my plan, you know, just of how I'm going to deal with the defect of anger. You know, I just, this is not the way the world should, the world should be. And it's not up to me, you know, and I'm powerless. You know, whether I could influence anything, I don't think so. I mean, I don't like what's going on. Thank you in the world. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Megan from Manhattan, and I'm in OA since 1977. That's 48 years, I think. And I'm maintaining a 60-pound weight loss. Closer? Lift it. Okay, thanks. My main character defect is people-pleasing. And when my sponsor told me you have to get down on your knees to pray for a willingness to remove the defect of people, please said, no, I was so scared because I thought everybody would leave me, which, you know, to a large extent actually happened over time. So I said, oh, he doesn't want me to be alone. And I said, that's not possible. I said, I don't want to do that. And he said, if you don't do that, I'll leave you as a sponsor. I thought, what? You've been with me like 8 months or something like that. And are you going to leave me? He said, yes. So I quickly thought of a program epithet. And it was, okay, well, what if I act as if? I didn't even know what I was saying. And okay, if you give it a good try. So I said, well, what should I do? And he said, well, get down on your knees and pray for the for God to remove the defect of people-pleasing. And, you know, I'm not of the faith where you pray with your hands in front of your face. And I did that. I got down on my knees, put my hands together, and I said, God, you know, you and I both know you're not there. And then all of a sudden, I got a very big warm feeling in my chest. I still remember it was like the best feeling I ever had in my whole life. I thought, oh crap, maybe you are. I said, I want to, you know, pray for the defect, for removal of the defect of people pleasing. And I did that for 7 years on my knees every day. And I don't have people pleasing. I have discernment. I love saying yes. But I have to figure it out. Do I actually want to say yes, or am I just compulsively, you know, saying yes because I want somebody to like me? And that was really most of the time. And saying no, really, one time I said, I talked back to a boss, and I asked God for the words, and I did everything right. I came back to my desk, and it was like this. It was very tough wood. And I stood there, and that wood, I thought there was an earthquake in Manhattan. It shook. I was shaking. It was so hard to not be a people pleaser. So hard. So I give everybody a lot of credit. I'm abstinent today. Thank you.
So I'm Dorothy, the compulsive eater. And prior to coming into the program and realizing the truth, I grew up thinking that perfectionism was an asset to be strived for. And it really did louder. Perfectionism is an asset to be strived for. Really, I thought that, and it prevented me from doing an awful lot of things or trying anything. So how do you get better at sports, or how do you get better at anything? You get better by practicing. But I didn't understand that, and I wanted to go immediately to perfection, and if I couldn't be perfect, I didn't. And it wasn't until I came into program that realizing that it was a defect. So all of those years, and it was difficult to be able to say that good enough is good enough. And I came to an acceptance around good enough is good enough when I thought, well, before it was the perfection piece, and now good enough is good enough. So if I was trying to be a perfectionist, then maybe even good enough is above average, because average would have been less than perfect to begin with, and I didn't start there. So it's a journey in progress, and I keep thinking about it, and how do I make amends to myself, and moving forward, how will my life be different, and what will I try? And, you know, failure isn't an option, but I'm not a mistake, and it's okay to make mistakes. And since I'm still alive, I can't have totally failed. So I'll just keep practicing, and thank you both for your shares. It brings peace, serenity, and levity to my life.
Hi everybody, I'm Kimberly, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi Kimberly.
And I'm so grateful to be here. Isn't it nice to have, I took for granted pre-COVID this moment. I don't take it for granted anymore. So first of all, I just have to say I was taking notes on my phone and I just happened to grab my chat app. And then it finishes words for you sometimes. And I typed in good enough, and in gray comes up is good enough. And I think it's, I don't know if it's because I've typed it so many times in my phone that it's for me, or if Howard just channeled in just to make sure I got that point. But so good enough is good enough. One of my very, very favorite, well, no, I don't have any number of it slogans. But there's a slogan that says, I can be willing to do something I don't want to do. And I can ask God to be willing to be willing. And I just love the concept of willingness, because it helps me be a grown-up. I mean, like, you know, if I couldn't be willing to do something I'm not willing to do, I would have no teeth, because I would have never seen a second dentist. The first dentist, yes, but not the second one, right? I came to OA, and I, under no uncertain terms, was going to be here for decades. I was gonna come, I was gonna get a deal and leave and live happily, thinly, ever after. Never mind bad shit, you know what, but nonetheless, I was willing to do things I didn't want to do. My sponsor told me to act as if, and I could face life a day at a time, a thing at a time, an idea at a time. I want to say a concept, but I really mean, you know, the concept of something, just an idea at a time, and be willing to try things that I don't really give I don't think will work, because it doesn't matter if I think it will work or not. It doesn't matter what I think. It only matters what I do. I love slogan. Thanks.
Hi everyone, I'm a compulsive overeater and restrictor. Hi, I'm really grateful. Thank you both so much for your shares. I loved all of the water imagery. That was great. And both of you have illuminated for me that I think for a long time now, I've been working the steps up to 5 and then jumping right over to 8. And I remember working step 6 for the first time, and my sponsor handed me a list of 100 character defects, and I had to write on all of them. And I filled an entire spiral notebook, college ruled, of where these defects of character were present in my life. And of course, part of my disease is that I am the piece of shit at the center of the universe. And so it just got me down as I'm writing out all these defects of character. And I'm realizing in this moment that I did not have God present with me as I was writing those out, because I don't have to remove those. God has to help me remove those. And I'm not doing it by myself. And that's somewhere where I have to remind myself I'm not doing this alone, because I am someone who will just do things, just get me through. I can do this alone. As I was listening to the speakers, I got this image of myself that has only been told to me by my parents, but that I only remember being a very shy, insecure child. And my mother said that when she took me to ballet class, as a 5-year-old, and all the other girls were performing, I did this. I folded my arms, so the people in the listening recording knows, I folded my arms, I turned around, and I wasn't going to do what they said. And I realized my disease wants me to keep operating from that place. So here I am, adult Kate, and I am able to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of a higher power. And working with these defects is such a useful way to do that. I am so glad to hear the columns, and this is the problem, and here's the solution. That's how we work the steps. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Beth, compulsive overeater, bulimic, and anorexic from Nashua, New Hampshire. I'm Beth, compulsive overeater, bulimic, and anorexic from Nashua, New Hampshire. I'm very grateful to be here. I wasn't going to speak. I figured this weekend was a weekend for me to hear, to listen. But something got me off that seat. When I think of step 7, and this was like a light bulb for me, maybe other people have felt this, and I think of the principle of humility, I think of the being teachable. I love the definition in our 12 and 12 of not being anywhere on an imagined ladder of worth, because that's what I grew up with. Well, don't stoop to their level and blah, blah, blah. But where does humility come into that? I think for me, the big thing is I can't remove my character defects. I've tried. You know, if you're dishonest, be honest. Well, problem is I'm dishonest to myself. I lie to myself. And nobody else knows I lie to myself but me. I can be grocery store honest. I can actually go in and say, wait a minute, you didn't charge me enough for this and pay the extra. And it just other things. And that dawned on me here, a light bulb over my head, that's where humility comes in, is that I can take the action of being honest. I can't remove my dishonesty. That has to come from a power outside of myself. And I'm not that powerful. With that, thank you.
This is all the time we have for sharing. Thank you for attending the workshop. We'll close with the we version of the Serenity Prayer.